Hi, I'm Perry, and you're listening to The Beauty Brains. Hello, and welcome to The Beauty Brains, a show where real cosmetic chemists answer your beauty product questions and give you an insider's look at the cosmetic industry. This is episode 356. I'm your host, Perry Romanowski, and with me today, as always, is Valerie George. Hello, Valerie.
Hi, Perry.
Where in the world are you today, Valerie? Traveling somewhere, or are you at home?
I was traveling, but I am back in Texas now.
Well, that's good to hear, because you're here to answer questions that the audience has had, and there's lots of them. On today's show, we are going to be covering lots of hair questions and a skincare question, but they are including, can hair be too healthy to curl? Does hair porosity matter when picking products? When is the best time to curl your hair? Should you limit hair curling to once every 3 days? It's a lot of hair curling. What's the maximum temperature to heat your hair? Do flat iron curls last longer than curling irons? What can you put on your hair to make your curls last longer? And another hair question, how can you tell the difference between two hair conditioners? And that one scarecrow question that I promised, can adipose plump up your face? But first, some chit-chat. Valerie, you said you were traveling. We are actually going to record the other day, but you couldn't do it. Why was that?
I couldn't because I had some coffee, I don't know how it happened, spilled into the portal holes of my laptop, and it fried the laptop, and so I had no way to communicate with you or anybody.
That must have been inconvenient for you.
Inconvenience is a small word because I was traveling, I wasn't home, so I was like, oh shoot, what do I do? The Genius Bar had no appointments, and so I just showed up and I was like, please help me because I'm in big trouble here. And thank goodness for the cloud, although I did lose a handful of things.
Oh, well. You know, I have all these old computers that like were Windows 98 or what was that? Windows XP or one of the old ones anyway. I have all these fields and I'm like, I wonder if I can still access all that stuff. But like some of the stuff doesn't translate anymore. Mm-hmm. It's all this technology changes and we lose this whole history of stuff. And people say, oh, the internet's completely backed up. Never. Nothing gets deleted. I'm not sure that that's so true.
No, in fact, you can even like on a website go way back and look at old website archives. People do keep those as well on the web. I don't think anything ever really gets deleted.
At least for now. I think, you know, pretty soon people will be just like, I'm not going to keep up with technology. And then that kind of stuff will just be gone. Like, I'm trying to get my DragonSpeak audio back, and I just can't do it.
Oh, I remember that app. That was cool.
Well, you know, I've been traveling a bit, too. I was just in Mexico.
That's right.
And that's right. There are two things. First of all, I learned that I need to find the right karaoke song for me when I'm traveling into a country that speaks mainly Spanish, because this is the second one that I've gone to where I was like, oh, I have my karaoke songs. I do, but everyone's singing in Spanish. So,
well, we went to Canada and did karaoke together, and thank goodness our English songs work just fine.
We did, exactly. And, you know, the English songs work fine, but I'm like, you know, when in Rome, you should, you know, like, well, I guess there you do Italian. But anyway, so if anybody has an idea for a karaoke song that I should do that's in Spanish, you know, let me know. All right, the other thing, I was in Mexico, and you know, you can carry toiletries with you, yeah? And I had this little bag of toiletries, and I had this hand lotion, and I'm using this hand lotion for days, and it's working fine. And then, like 3 days in, I look at it, and I'm like, oh, wait, that was hair conditioner.
Oh, gosh. It didn't feel heavy or kind of a weird slimy, because usually when you have a hair conditioner, it has cationic emulsifiers in it, and it can feel a little, you know, sticky on skin.
No, not at all.
I just don't think you noticed. Oh, my goodness.
I did not even notice. I mean, it was working fine. I mean, it was the right texture and such, and...
Well, in a most urgent pinch, because you don't know if it is preserved correctly to be left on the skin, you don't know if there's too much cationic material in there. You can't have that many quats left on the skin. So I hate to be the, you know, negative Nancy here, but...
No, I agree with you. It's not a good idea to do, but, you know...
In an emergency.
At least on these non-sensitive hands that can apparently, you know, I just put gasoline on them and they'll be fine.
Oh, goodness. What else happened this week?
Well, I was listening to a couple of podcasts, and the first one I want to talk about is this Radiolab podcast. They were doing their, like, end-of-the-year show about asking questions about the body. And there was this thing that reminded me of something that happens in the beauty industry.
Okay.
And this woman told a story about mosquito bites, okay? And she swears by this product. There's, like, if you get a mosquito bite, there's, like, this... Apparently, there's this little pump thing so that you get the mosquito bite, and then you put this pump on it, and it's supposed to suck out the poison. So,
okay.
So it makes the, you know, the itching go away, and it makes the swelling go away. And she spent this whole time going through and trying to scientifically prove that this actually worked. And she found a study that was published by the makers of the product that...
Biased.
That demonstrated that it worked, of course. And it was like, you know, 40 people or something like that. And then she goes around and interviews some scientists. And they're like, yeah, no, that wouldn't actually work like that. And it all comes down to this being a big placebo effect.
A placebo effect is pretty powerful, though.
Right. I mean, absolutely. But the thing I think was the producer of the show or something, and she was interviewing everybody, and she just did not want it to be the placebo effect because she's thinking, well, if it's the placebo effect, then it's just in my head. And I don't want people to think that this is just in my head because it really works. And I think that's how you know, a lot of beauty products are. I think a lot of beauty products, they work as placebos because they're all good moisturizers and moisturizing works and they're all fine and such. But if you tell people that, oh, this has got this special ingredient in it and it's going to do actually something, whether it does or not, it's in your brain. And so it's just a placebo effect and it can still actually make it look like it's working, even though it might just be a placebo. But I don't think people really want to know that, at least some people don't, because the producer did not want to believe that this little sucking device was a placebo effect, even though that's probably what it was.
I wouldn't want to believe either. I don't think there's any harm in the placebo effect. I think, sure, it might show there's some weakness in your mind. Maybe that's why this person didn't want to admit it. But I actually think, who cares? You're getting the outcome that you want after using the product. And to me, that's the most important thing, is the outcome.
I'm 100% in agreement with you. If the product works for you, then it works. It doesn't really matter why it works, you know.
Or if it doesn't work and you think it works.
That's even better. Oh boy. So then I thought, I wonder how many people out there in Beauty Brains land don't want to know whether their products are just overpriced placebos or not. I imagine a lot of people don't.
Well, I think we get that question all the time, that's for sure. What was the second podcast that you mentioned?
There's an excellent show called How I Built That.
Oh, that's a great podcast.
Yeah, and it's all about innovators and how they created famous brands and such. And they did one on Drunk Elephant, which I thought was it was a pretty interesting story. But this is essentially somebody, woman in her 40s. She just was a stay-at-home mom, and she was looking for a way to make extra money. And she tells this story of how she came up with the brand Drunk Elephant. Now, she has no scientific background or no real background in skin or anything, and she's just, like, researched stuff on Google, and she tested the stuff on her own skin, and she came up with this brand, and she even drew the logo herself. She came up with the name herself, and man, they just sold the brand for like $865 million. And like, the brand was only like 6 years old.
Well, she did a great job, right?
I mean, obviously. I mean, she could build it from like nothing to 800 plus million in like 6 years. I mean, there's no new technology there. Like, how does this even happen?
What I always found interesting about Tiffany Masterson, first, you know, the products are nice. Some the hair care is terrible, I have to be honest. It's awful. I don't even know if they still sell it, but they always talk about the suspicious six on their website. They don't sell things with essential oils, drying alcohol, silicones, chemical sunscreens, fragrances, dyes, and SLS. I guess they're just too suspicious. However, I believe Tiffany Masterson, the founder of Drunk Elephant, has actually been quoted that she doesn't think there's any health risks with silicone. So I always thought that was really interesting that it's a suspicious six with the brand, but when it comes to her personally, she has no problem with them.
Well, I have to say, in the interview, she sort of described how she got to the things. And, you know, it was just like, well, I would just avoid this and then my skin would look good. And so then I'm like, okay, I have to avoid that now. And I think, you know, in the interview, she really focused on differences. She insisted to avoid essential oils, which is where a lot of brands that are clean and natural will still use essential oils to keep, you know, part of it natural. And honestly, using essential oils is a terrible idea because these oils, at least some of them, can actually interact with the skin and cause reactions with a lot of people. And her avoiding that probably was a pretty smart move.
I agree.
I don't agree with the silicone avoiding stuff. The essential oils are not great things to put on your skin and leave them
there. No, they are not. Well, some of them are harmless, but, you know, it depends on the use level, the product application, you know, are they phototoxic or not? But I think the challenge I have with people using essential oils is when they slander the fragrance industry, because they'll say, oh, well, it's safer than fragrances, which can contain thousands of items, which is a stretch, I think.
Yeah.
Essential oils contain thousands of items. You just can't see them. They're really complex mixtures extracted from plants. Whereas with the synthetic fragrance, at least, you have some guarantee of purity because these molecules have been synthesized and they have 98, 99% purity.
And plants really evolve these essential oils to either attract other animals to pollinate or, like, prevent other animals from harming the plant. So it's no surprise that some essential oils are harmful to people because plants don't want you touching them.
Exactly. The one thing about that, how I made that podcast with Tiffany Masterson is, do you think you could start a brand, or what do you think it takes to start a brand? Because this is a really incredible success story, but it's not often that you see this.
Right. I think a lot of it, of course, is luck, because we've seen tons of brands like this, very similar, like, oh, I have no background in skincare, and you know, I tested a bunch of stuff on my skin, and then I just came up with this thing. I think she had this uncommon stick-to-itiveness where she just did a lot of work. But it was also like a timing thing. She got it in just right, like where when Instagram was coming around and it was becoming important for building a beauty brand and things. And if she did it 10 years before that, before social media was even a thing, I don't think this brand would have even stood a chance. I mean, if you don't know a buyer, you couldn't get your product into stores. But to your question of whether I could do it, no, not a chance at all. Because I think to be really successful to build a beauty brand, you have to believe your own BS. And I could never have done really that. I couldn't be like, oh, I'm going to avoid this ingredient and that means it's bad. I just don't believe that. You know, I don't believe that my skin would be representative of what everybody else should do.
That's interesting.
Whereas, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs have the notion that we're like, oh, I've got this solution and it works for me. And if you follow it, it's going to be great for your life. That's why you don't find more beauty brands created by cosmetic chemists.
You have to stretch the limits of things. And I'm just not a limit stretcher. What's the most we could say about something? I'm not a more is more person. I'm a less is more. And unfortunately, in marketing and sales, that doesn't get you very far all the time.
I mean, yeah, someone says, what shampoo do you use? And I'm like, well, you should use Suave or VO5 and because you'll spend less money and they work. And, you know, that's not very helpful when you're trying to build a brand.
Mm-mm-mm.
Speaking of building brands, let's get to some beauty news.
This one was all over the internet this week, and maybe not all over ordinary people's internet, but if you are in the beauty world, you did not see enough of Michael Cera. Or I guess I would say you saw too much of Michael Cera, because This is a really interesting thing. You saw the article,
right? I did. Should we call him Michael Cerave?
Okay, guys, so if you don't know, here's what happened. Michael Cera was walking around New York City with these giant, bulging, bursting shopping bags of CeraVe moisturizer that he was autographing and giving out. And I was like, wow, this is the coolest CeraVe campaign ever, because you can't spell CeraVe without Cera. Well, it turns out he is actually not affiliated with the brand at all. He was just doing this, I guess, on his own volition. I don't know, because he says he's affiliated with CeraVe. They say, no, we are sticking to our guns. We only go through dermatologists. We appreciate his enthusiasm for these moisturizers, but we are not endorsing him. And so I thought that was pretty interesting. What do you think is the truth, Perry?
I don't know. This is, it got pretty viral and such, but...
Did he just have a free Tuesday afternoon? Like, what was going on?
I mean, yeah, he's probably in New York and somebody was asking. I have not. No, this must be staged, right? Nobody's going to do this. I don't know.
On their own free time to support another brand, unless he was dared to do it or something like that.
Right. Yeah, I would think so. That's what I'm going with. I think so.
I thought that was, anyway, a little small tidbit of news, but funny.
What brand could I do? Is there a brand that starts with Perry?
Or ends with Perry?
No,
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't. Well, I'll think about that.
Yeah, well, my friends always said, they call me Queen V. And they said, you should start a brand called Queen V. And I was like, oh, that's really cute. So there's actually already one, but it's intimate care.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, I was like, that's not a brand for me.
There's a brand that is like a famous Pandora, right?
Okay.
Pandora is like a digital one, but Pandora is also like a fashion brand or something, isn't it?
It's a jewelry brand, yeah.
Right. How does that happen? Like, wasn't there an overlap there?
Not according to trademark law. I mean, I'm not a trademark lawyer, yeah. But you file a trademark for a class and... You know, maybe there's not enough overlap in their business strategy and channels to have confusion. I don't know.
I guess. I mean, with social media, like, one of them's Pandora and, like, one of them's, it seems like a problem. Like,
your wife says, I want Pandora for Christmas, and you get her an annual subscription, and she throws it in your face.
Right. I'm going to start a McDonald's University. You think I can do that?
I think they actually already have one.
Well, yeah, but, like, the company does, right? Like,
yeah.
Or McDonald's automobiles or something like that. Could you do that?
I don't know. Oh, my gosh. I don't think you can. As long as it doesn't look like the Hamburglar's car.
Indeed. Valerie, let's move on to some listener comments. This one comes to us from Elizabeth, who is a patron. Incidentally, if you like what we do on the show and you want to support us, feel free to do that through Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/thebeautybrains and subscribe at any level. And you get to read your comments on the show, or when your questions get a higher priority too. All right, this is what she says. Hi, I'm in the middle of listening to episode 354, and I was a bit surprised by the comments that no one is challenging this scientist's thought system when articles are submitted for publication in an open access journal. As I'm sure you know, open access refers to the funding model, not whether the journal uses peer review or not. I've published in Scientific Reports, an open access journal from the Nature Publishing Group, and my work certainly went through peer review, and I don't think it's quite accurate to say that no one challenged my thought process. Different journals certainly have different standards and different funding models, certainly incentivize different behaviors, but please don't conflate the funding model with the review process. Love your show, Elizabeth. Yeah, it might have been unclear there, but I can certainly see open access does not mean not peer-reviewed, but sometimes it does mean that.
Yeah, I don't think I probably said that, and I don't think I meant to be exclusive in that open access journals are never peer-reviewed. I was more referring to that. I think a fair bit of them are pay-to-play, and they don't necessarily go through a review process. I didn't mean it to be so exclusive that, they never get peer reviewed, certainly. And I think it's great that Elizabeth is getting published in these open access journals to share her research with people. And they were reviewed by her peers. So that's really amazing. I think we were more just speaking to, you know, in general, you don't necessarily know, and I think it's probably always good to check the integrity of the journal when you read it.
Yeah, I'm actually a fan of open access journals, and the publishing world, it's not really a good deal for the scientists where they can hide stuff and things. So it's nice that anybody can get published somewhere, but on the other hand, then anybody can get published anywhere. So sometimes the standards could get loosened. But overall, I like the idea of open access. I just, they aren't all the same. All right, Valerie, that brings us to our question time. Our questioner from patron, Rumi, she has been a patron for a while, and she has lots of hair questions. Presumably, she has long hair that she curls, because a lot of the questions are about that. So I will ask the questions, and Valerie, we can jointly answer, but you can take the lead here. So Rumi says, "Hello, Beauty Brains. I'm so glad I found you again. I was checking your blog periodically, and I thought you had stopped making content." No, we just switched from blog writing to podcasting.
We just stopped blogging.
Yeah. We'll come back. I was going to go through and take our content and make them blogs, but, you know, we're mostly just focused on the podcast. Anyway, my name is Rumi, and I currently live in California. I have quite a few questions. Loved your show, and I am now trying to make up for 3 years that I've missed. Wow. You've been on the show for, 6 years now, huh?
Oh my gosh, 6 years, Perry. No, since 2019. Wow. Oh my gosh, no, it was late 2018.
2018, yeah, there you go.
So I think we're 5 years and a couple months.
Five and some months. That's right. Oh, sorry.
I can't believe it's been that long. Oh my goodness.
Go figure.
We'll have to celebrate my fifth birthday with the show.
We will, but that's not till like the fall. So we have that. All right, here's the first question. Is it true that hair can be too healthy for curling or flat irons curls to last? I've seen this claim several times. My hair is indeed very healthy, but it's kind of unruly and frizzy. So what do you think of that?
I don't think hair can be too healthy for curling. Or should I say, I don't think the health of the hair is related to the longevity of the curling or flat iron. From a technical perspective, I have very healthy hair. When you drop water on it, it doesn't even wet into the hair fiber. The water actually beads up on the hair because I don't chemically treat my hair. I try to protect it from the sun. I don't thermally damage my hair. I'm, you know, very minimal with it. And so I would say, even though my hair is very long, pretty healthy, but it holds a curl very well. It holds a flat iron very well. And I think that more has to do probably with the chemistry of the hair fiber itself and the way that it grows out of my hair. So where the disulfide bonds appear in the hair, how much water content is in my hair,
right?
That sort of thing.
Yeah, if you think about it, like a dry, damaged, like bleach blonde hair, I don't think that's going to hold a curl as well as a hair that isn't damaged, right?
Well, I think it could. I think it depends on the fiber diameter. Mm-hmm. I think it depends on the length of the hair, how weighed down the hair is. And I think it has to do with the density of the hair. I think there's a lot of things, not necessarily damage. I have a friend, her hair is very long, and it holds a curl for about 18 seconds and then just naturally straightens again. And I wouldn't say she has the healthiest hair. She gets a lot of highlights, a lot of bleaching, but it's not bleached like she doesn't look like a troll doll with the cotton candy type hair. So, I think it just has to do with the fiber diameter, the length, how much of it you have, and the actual chemistry of the hair.
The protein content, yeah.
Yeah, because when you reshape hair, whether it's straightening it or curling it, you're temporarily disrupting some of the hydrogen bonding within the hair fiber and allowing it to reconfigure, and then you would put it in place with a styling polymer. And everyone's hair is just different in that sense.
It is. All right, next question. Does hair porosity actually matter when it comes to choosing products and heat styling? Can we even know our hair porosity without sending it to a lab? Are online tests, such as letting your hair float in water, reliable? I have fine, low porosity, thick hair. I'm not sure if I need to choose special styling products for gels, mousse, or heat protectants. Now, I'm not a big believer in this whole concept of porosity myself.
Neither are the hair scientists.
Right. But it is sort of a consumer or stylist sort of led philosophy, and some people find it helpful. I think it's just a different way to describe whether your hair is damaged or not, because I don't think you could have like undamaged high porosity hair. I just don't believe that exists, but some people will disagree with that. But as far as using porosity to choose your products, such as your gels or mousses or heat protectants, I don't think it has anything to do with it at all. Myself, what's your thoughts?
When you're looking for a styling product to help reshape your hair, protect your hair from heat, give your hair volume, the porosity really doesn't matter, because the styling product is going to relatively be the same regardless of the hair type. For example, a heat protectant, when you formulate those, you generally aren't taking into consideration the level of damage on the hair already or the level of porosity on the hair. You're just designing a product in the required format that's going to deliver the heat protection, and the same with styling. If you're not sure what this water test is that Rumi's referring to, basically it's very popular within the stylist community, hairstylist community of salon professionals. You take a cup filled with water, you cut some of your hair off, and you toss it into this cup. If it floats, your hair is not damaged, because if you have healthy hair, it has a nice hydrophobic layer on it. And this hydrophobic layer repels water. And so therefore, if your hair is healthy, you have this layer, your hair is going to float. Now, if you're missing this hydrophobic protective layer, or your hair has a lot of damage, you have a lot of cysteic acid groups on your hair. And these are easily going to solvate in the water. So they're going to sink as soon as it hits the water. So if your hair is porous, it's going to sink right into that water cup.
Sure.
But really, that I think that's supporting what you're saying, Perry, is if you have a lot of these cysteic acid groups or your hair is porous, it really is just a sign of the damage level.
Yeah, exactly. You couldn't have like undamaged high porosity hair. It also, that test is like, well, if there's any residual hair conditioner on there, it's not going to sink either. So it's like,
exactly.
Yeah. So I don't think it's a helpful test. Okay, next question. The internet seems divided on whether it's best to curl hair right after washing or on the next day. Which one is correct? I saw a hairdresser say that for some people, it works better on the second day because the hair is less conditioned by then. Who is right?
Well, this is an interesting question, and I'd like to tell you a story about a styling product that we were creating.
Yeah.
Where we wanted to put this cream on hair, and we wanted people to be able to style and restyle the hair. Well, when you left the cream really lightweight and the hair felt really smooth and polished and light and bouncy, the style actually fell flat faster, and it was more difficult to restyle. When you formulated the product to leave a residue on hair, it held curl better, it held curl tighter, and it held it longer, and you could reshape your hair pretty easily. Now, the downside is your hair doesn't feel as clean, and this was because there was a lot more coating the hair to help it grip on the tool and, reconform the hair.
Sure.
And so in my opinion, from that perspective, it really had to do with the amount of product left on the hair, something that left more residue versus didn't, right? So
right.
I guess in thinking of that, well, second day hair would have more residue. So maybe there would be more benefit to styling your hair on the second day. But I think you would just put a styling product on your hair. If you're going to curl your hair, you should be putting a product on anyway.
Right.
Because you never want to put heat on hair without heat protecting it. Even though I do it all the time. I'm like a doctor smoking, being like, you shouldn't smoke. It's terrible for you.
Sure.
Meanwhile, I'm flat ironing my bangs without any product on it.
Well, you know. This notion that the second day the hair is less conditioned, that's not right at all. It's going to be more conditioned, if anything.
Oh, unless, good catch.
Right? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, so that's not right.
Yeah. So I guess if you weren't using product, the second day would be better because your hair is more soiled.
Right. It's more soiled. I could see not curling right after washing because there's still like residual water in your hair. And that
good
might
point.
Make it harder. And if you're curling your hair when it's still wet, that could boil the water that's inside your hair, and that could actually damage your hair more. The next day, your hair is going to be drier. It's not going to be less conditioned, but it will be drier.
I definitely recommend waiting until your hair is bone dry to curl or straighten it.
Yeah.
For the reasons that Perry mentioned, but also when your hair is still wet, these hydrogen bonds that I talked about that either help your hair realign in a curl or realign in a straight look, the water, there's no water there, presumably. But if your hair is even damp, those hydrogen bonds are dissolved from the water. And then when the water naturally evaporates, they're going to reform and it's going to mess up your style. So your hair does need to be bone dry.
Right, right. That's why you wake up with bedhead. All right, next question. Is it true that it's best to use a flat or curling iron no more than once every 3 days? That's what I've been doing for the past 2 months, and my hair looks just as healthy as before. Not sure if I will see more damage later on.
Well, he is definitely terrible for your hair. That's for sure.
Sure.
So I would say it depends what temperature you're heating to with your tool. It depends on how many passes you're doing on your hair, meaning how many times you run the tool over your hair over and over and over in the same spots. It depends if you're using product. And then I would say it depends on your hair, because some people's hair is just more susceptible to heat damage than others.
Right.
And this is what, coincidentally, it's a Perryism, if you lighten your hair with bleach and then you thermally treat it, even more damage. It's like extra damaging. So
sure.
It kind of depends, all those things. So I don't want to say, you shouldn't use it no more often than once every 3 days, but like anything with heat, less is better.
Yeah. And if what you're doing and your hair looks still good 2 months later, it's probably fine.
Keep it up.
We'll check back in 4 months, but I think it's all right. Next one. Is it true that you should never heat your hair to more than 450 degrees Fahrenheit? My flat iron goes up to 480, but I'm afraid to use it
yikes.
At that level. I use it at 425.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really hot. I can't believe they make tools that go up this high. You actually never even want to use 450 Fahrenheit, which is about 230 Celsius on your hair, because keratin, which is the protein that makes up the bulk of your hair fiber, that starts to denature around 227.
Right.
So if you're going up to 450 Fahrenheit, which is 230, you're going to melt your hair. And the fact that it goes up to 480, whoo, I would never put that on my hair.
Yeah, and just to be clear, like, you're not like melting it like the way you would melt like a plastic, but you're reconfiguring the structure. And so that's
it could
what
melt.
That's kind of what, or it there, could melt. Yeah, it could melt.
It could.
Too.
There's a great YouTube video of this girl trying to curl her bangs.
Right.
And she goes to pull the iron out, and the hair comes off with it because she done melted it off.
Right.
I laugh hysterically every time I see it.
Right. Yes, indeed.
There's actually a study published in the Journal of Cosmetic Science that shows that a lower temperature with more passes is less damaging than a higher temperature with fewer passes.
Interesting.
So I would do what your friend does, heat your iron up to a lower temperature and just do more passes over it.
Well, you know what the problem with that is, though?
Hmm.
It just takes longer.
That's true.
You know, if you're good at up to like 700, you only need one pass.
Can I flat iron your hair one day?
No, my hair's already flat, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Next question. People seem to say that flat iron curls last longer than curling iron curls because a flat iron heats up both sides of the hair, not just one side. Is this true? Also, what's the mechanism which a flat iron curls hair? The techniques that I see online work, but I do not know why.
Well, this is a really great question, and I really wish I could do the flat iron curling technique. I'm just not that great with my hair and the angles and my arms and the device. But basically, a flat iron curl is where you take the hair in the flat iron and pinch it and pull it really taut and start to pull down the whole length of the hair with tension while rotating the flat iron. And when you remove the flat iron, the hair bounces into a curl. Whereas with a curling iron, you just kind of wrap the hair around the iron. Only one side is getting heated. You have to wait for it to heat all the way through.
Right.
And then you pull the iron out. I think the flat iron technique works better. I mean, maybe because both sides of the hair fiber are being heated, but I actually think it really works because you're using tension to stress the hair while it's being heated and conforming it. Yeah. And I think that's why it works better.
I would think that the amount of heat that you get from the curling iron is going to pass pretty much through the entire fiber. So the fact that it's on both sides, I don't think that's going to have much impact. But you're right, the amount of tension and pressure, that could have a bigger impact. So it probably is not surprising that a flat iron curl could last a little longer. All right, last question.
I can't believe she got 7 in.
Last question from Rumi.
Look at Rumi.
What is a product I can put on my hair before or after curling the hair to make the curls last longer?
Well, I would say the product you put on before that's a thermal protectant. I generally would recommend like a cream or a mousse or a spray. Uh-huh. This is not necessarily going to give the hair hold. It might give it a little bit of hold. But the hold's going to come from the product you put on afterwards, because the pre-product is really a polymer that's going to help reduce the amount of heat transfer to the hair, which reduces damage. Afterwards, the hold is going to come from a hairspray. Now, I'm not saying you can't get hold from the other products, but I would say if your challenge is hold, I would use an aerosol hairspray. I actually wouldn't use anything that has water in it, because you're just going to re-wet the hair and change the shape of it.
Yeah. That's a good point. But if you want to hold the curl, I mean, hairsprays were great for that. That's what they were invented for, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Those are done after you've already done the shape. Okay, well, thank you for all those hair questions. And we have another hair question before we get to our skincare question, which is coming soon. This one comes to us from another loyal Patreon listener, Laura. She says, hi, Valerie and Perry, loyal Patreon listener here with a question on deep conditioners. I recently purchased 2 conditioners and am pleased with them both. However, one was very expensive compared to the other. We've got the Curlsmith Multitasking Conditioner. May be used as either a regular conditioner for 1 to 2 minutes or for 15 minutes as a more intense result at $30 for 32 ounces. Or,
wow, that's a deal.
The Living Proof Intense Moisture Mask, you leave on for 5 minutes. That's $25 for just 6 ounces. So, yeah, it's about 5 times as expensive, I guess, right?
Yeah.
4 times there. I have blonde bleached hair with frizzy ends. Although my hair is not curly, I have used and love the Curlsmith products. I want to use the product that will best moisturize and tame my frizzy ends. So please share your thoughts. Thank you, Laura. Well, thanks for the question, Laura. Taking a look at these products.
What do you think of this multitasking conditioner?
Well, okay. First of all, the conditioner, the marketing is...
I don't know
why
I'm asking you, but I want to get you fired up. What do you think?
The marketing is a little... hinky here. Okay, that's the 3-in-1 conditioner. Okay, they can be 3 anything, but it says it's a leave-in, a rinse-out, or a deep conditioner. You can't be all of those things, right? You certainly can't be a leave-on and a rinse-off. I think you gotta choose it. You could be.
Well, I think you can, but I think the quality experience will be different.
Right,
from
right.
A theoretical, can you do it? Sure, you can formulate a conditioner that can be left on or that can be rinsed off. Are you going to get the best conditioner both ways? No.
Actually, that reminds me of a story. My sister was staying with me one summer, and this is when I was at Alberto, and I was making this conditioner. And this is a rinse-out conditioner, but the only packaging that we had was labeled. It said leave-on conditioner. So I had these samples.
Oh, that's right. I think you...
All right. These samples I brought home, my sister was using it for like a week. Oh, I love that leave-in conditioner. I'm like, no, that's a rinse-out conditioner. But she couldn't tell the difference. So I suppose...
Well, you should have told the marketing team.
I know, I should have. So I suppose, yeah, okay, something could be leave-in and rinse-out too. It all depends on your
standards.
But
that doesn't mean it's going to be good both ways.
Right.
I want to remind everyone of that.
Exactly. So let's take a look at... So that's that Curlsmith. They're promising a lot of things. We'll see. And then the Living Proof product, which you have had some experience with this one, eh?
I really love this one. The Curlsmith, okay. I've tried a bunch of the Curlsmith products. They're great as well. But I think this Living Proof product is in a totally different class. First, Living Proof, I just want to remind everybody, was founded based off a technology, an ingredient technology that they discovered for hair. And they'd have a lot of researchers in their headquarters in Boston conducting fundamental research on hair, looking for the newest, latest, and greatest. They're pumping a lot of science into the work that they do. And when you touch the formulas, you can just tell that it's a really high quality formula. And the proof is in the fact that it works. I have used the Living Proof products for years from their No Frizz line. I think it's called No Frizz. It's basically sure. frizz with a strike through right. Through the text. But I've been using it for years, and I think it does a really great job.
And Jennifer Aniston never seems to have frizz.
Well, Jennifer Aniston has an entourage.
All right. No, well, there's that. It's not
I always thought the products
Living Proof, right?
Exactly. I always thought the products were really great in controlling my frizz. I have, in at least California, my hair looks like a lion's mane, and I always enjoyed how soft and smooth this made my hair look. Now, not to say that the Curlsmith products won't do that, but I would say when we look at the ingredient list, it's kind of an ordinary conditioner.
Can I just say something? She says it's $25 for 6 ounces. This says it's $45 for 6 ounces.
Oh, whoa. Where at?
At Sephora.
Well, I want to know where Laura's getting it from.
I know. Where are you getting it for $25? Whoa. All right. Well, I'm looking at the ingredient listings. Now, there are some similarities here. Both of the brands use...
water?
Well, they both use water, of course. But Behentrimonium chloride, which is a pretty common rinse-off conditioning ingredient.
Very common.
And they both use, like, cetyl alcohol, of course. But, you know, everybody uses that, right?
Mm-hmm.
The big difference is...
the selection of oils, the selection of emollients.
Right.
Living Proof's proprietary anti-frizz technology.
They have that too, yes. So there are certainly some differences in the products, and so you can expect some different performances, but there's certainly some overlap. Now, the question is it worth the difference in pricing?
That's the real question. I would say yes. I would think there's going to be a difference, at least in the frizz perspective.
Right.
Maybe not from a hair moisture perspective, because you've mentioned this before. I don't know what episode, maybe like 150 episodes ago.
Sure.
If you leave a conditioner on your hair for 1 to 2 minutes or 5 minutes, the difference that you see is very, very tiny, non-noticeable.
Right. Yes.
And you could even leave something on for 15 minutes. Your hair might be a little softer, but I've only found that with heat, there's a huge difference when leaving right. a product on for a very long time. So that being said, leaving a mask on for 5 minutes and getting intense hydration and frizz reduction versus a product that comes in a jumbo bottle that you can use as a regular conditioner or just leave it all longer, it's in a mask. I'd probably say if you are really looking for an intense treatment, I'd go with the Living Proof.
Well, that is certainly reasonable advice, but there is one part of her...
What's your advice?
Well, there's one part of her question which I think is quite telling to me, and she ends it and says, although my hair is not curly, I have used and love the Curlsmith products. And so if you've used and loved it, I mean, you got to go with what's less expensive, right? I mean,
well,
if she hated it, yes, try something else. But if you love it, there's certainly nothing wrong with using that product. Now, I don't completely agree with their choice of the oil as a second ingredient there, but if she's using a product and she loves it, it's hard to argue with that.
Well, hey, I have a question. Laura bought them both and tried them both. Why didn't she tell us which one was the best for her hair?
That's a good question. Like, you know, consumers are always seeking that new thing, right? So she uses Curlsmith forever. She's like, I wonder if something else might work better. And she saw this. She got this super deal, like $25 for a $45 product. She's like, yeah. Oh, mate.
Well, I guess if she's pleased with both of them, I missed that detail at the very beginning. If she's pleased with both of them, go with the cheaper one.
Yeah.
If you were not sure and you're looking for that intense treatment, I don't know. I'd go with the Living Proof for my hair.
That's right. All right, Laura, I hope that was helpful. We've got time for one more question.
Kara says, hi, Valerie and Perry. I enjoy your show, especially when you talk about products with lofty claims like creating fat in the skin. You may have heard about a brand that's very critical of retinol and claims the active ingredients in Adipo face cream promote sustained regeneration, resulting in more numerous, smaller, fitter fat cells. I've included pictures for the Instagram posts so you can take a look. Wouldn't this be a drug claim, as you often point out? Thanks for all you do, Kara.
So the product is supposed to, you put it on your face and it makes more fat cells? Yeah, that would be a drug. But is that what they really claim?
It makes them smaller and fitter.
Right. But is this, we got to look at the claim specifically how they word it. Because a lot of times a company will be very clever with their claims and they'll write something where a consumer might think, oh, they said it removes my wrinkles. But they really said it just appears like it removes your wrinkles. And you know, it's very clever. So what did they actually write here? Adipose Active Face Cream addresses volume loss and skin sagging. Okay, that's not claiming anything.
Nope. Volume loss and skin sagging have long been a concern that's hard to address without dermal fillers.
Okay.
Fact.
No claim there. By harnessing cutting-edge research and advanced technology, Adipo stimulates the regeneration process within the skin. Okay.
You can't do that.
That was
my alarm. That was my Chernobyl alarm sound there.
Beauty products cannot stimulate skin regeneration.
Can they work synergistically to enhance cellular activity, promoting the production of healthy fat pads?
Oh, no. That's certainly gray there, too. Now, I will say that if you look at exactly what they're saying, they are couching it a little bit, right? Because when they say it's works synergistically, that's pretty vague. What does that mean? And then it says enhance cellular activity. Well, what does that mean? That could mean anything too. So that's pretty vague. And it's promoting the production of healthy fat pads. That doesn't mean it is making the production of healthy fat pads and collagen, but just promoting it. Like, hey, you got a promotion. What's that?
Allow me, Perry.
Sure.
Go down to the key ingredients. They say that long chain fatty acids from acne safe safflower oil stimulates the regeneration of healthy fat cells.
Okay.
I don't know of a safflower oil that does that. I don't know of a plant oil that does that.
And you can't say your cosmetic stimulates regeneration of fat cells. Like that's, I think they've gone a little too far there.
Well, they've gone a little further, too. So here in the description, oh, we're being safe, we're pushing the edge. But in the key ingredients of Thai black ginger, rejuvenates cellular function, increasing healthy fat pad cells, collagen, and elastin fibers, decreases wrinkles and facial atrophy.
Okay.
Do you think an extract could do that?
No, it can't. And I don't think you cannot claim that in a cosmetic either. So, yeah, they're going. I think they've got to that line. They inched up and they just plowed right through it. And if this did what they're claiming, this would certainly be biochemical function that you're impacting. And you can't do that as a cosmetic.
And I would like to think that there would be some peer-reviewed literature on it because retinol is highly studied. And there's no disputing the benefits that retinol has in skincare or in a dermatological care, et cetera. And I think the fact that they're poo-pooing on something that's known to work, saying they've discovered this rare extract, I just think it's really fancy marketing in its finest. And the before and after pictures of the people that I've seen on the internet, they're not in the same lighting conditions.
Sure.
I don't know that the skin looks much more improved, so I'm not sold.
And I'm not sure that I would call this marketing at its finest. It's like, just like, you can't.
Well,
like,
you know what I meant. It's an expression.
Sure. I'm just saying this is the kind of marketing that I think the beauty industry has got to get away from. You can't just make these drug claims like that and like...
What if we're calling it Adipo, but the real name is Adipu and we don't know how to pronounce it?
Okay. Oh, I'm sure they're going to be sending us some samples and telling us how great their products are now.
I would try it if they sent the samples, that's sure. For sure.
Oh, sure. Speaking of sure, do you sure hear that music?
Thanks for listening, everyone. If you get a chance, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. That's going to help other people find the show and ensure we have a full docket of beauty questions to answer.
Speaking of questions, if you have questions, just record it on your smartphone and email that to thebeautybrains@gmail.com, and you can get your voice on the show. We didn't use an AI voice today, although we could have, but, you know, I guess we're getting away from
that. Thank the Lord. Oh, yes.
Also, the Beauty Brains are on Patreon. If you appreciate what we do, and you appreciate the fact that we don't take advertising money, and we don't do sponsored posts or anything like that, then you can help keep the show going by supporting us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/thebeautybrains and subscribe at any level. We appreciate all of our patrons. If you are a patron, you get a transcript of the show. You also get a higher priority to answer your questions. And you can even ask like 7 questions and we'll answer them all.
Also, don't forget to follow us on our various social media accounts. On Instagram, we're at TheBeautyBrains2018. On Twitter, we're at TheBeautyBrains. We have a Facebook page and a TikTok.
All right. Well, it's great seeing you again, Valerie. We'll do this next time.
See you in a week. Thanks again for listening, everyone. And remember, be brainy about your beauty.
Thanks, everyone.
Kittens.